Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Had a good weekend. It is a cool overcast day after a good bit of rain we got last night and early this morning. So hopefully everybody is doing well here on this Monday. First Monday in a while that we've been on after an Auburn win. It had been 6 weeks since Auburn's last win. It's the middle of September.
The last time Auburn won a conference game, and we're doing a Monday show.
Oh, it's been a long, long time.
Was A&M last year?
When it's 6 weeks since you've been on, period.
Yeah.
Since a win, but Auburn did go to Fayetteville on Saturday, and behind an outstanding defensive performance, especially in the second half and the fourth quarter, with four turnovers created defensively and making a quarterback change to Ashton Daniels, the Tigers, and getting six field goals. I think the best feel-good story of Saturday had to be Alex McPherson. After struggling and feeling very down and blaming himself after the Missouri game, to go out and go 6-for-6 in field goals, including a 47-yarder on Auburn's way to that 33-24 win.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for, I think, a lot of guys that were starving for a victory in that locker room and had seen winnable games slip away. And for a defense that has looked like one of the best in the SEC through five conference games.
No one else in this league has done. Auburn has held every Power Four team to less and much less, as a matter of fact, than they have been averaging both points-wise and yards-wise all season.
And especially when you look at Auburn's defense on the ground, like this, mm-hmm. this is, I think, the number one reason that all five of these SEC games have felt winnable.
Oh, yeah.
Is because you've had a run defense that's gone out there and delivered over and over and over again and held teams. I mean, look, Georgia ran for under three a carry. Missouri ran for under three a carry. Arkansas
was averaging 225 a game on the ground coming in.
And look at how they'd been scoring, and Arkansas couldn't get much of anything going, and something Auburn's defense did a much better job against Arkansas. Missouri ran 39-40 plays in the first half of that game at Jordan-Hare. Auburn's defense got themselves off the field.
That is shocking.
A bunch of times in that Arkansas game, to the point where Arkansas didn't even run 50 plays.
No, I mean, when Hugh Freeze mentioned multiple times today that Arkansas ran just over 40 plays for the entire game, that's unbelievable. That is tremendous. By your defense.
But again, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, maybe not the turnover creation, but a lot of the other stuff, that's been a constant all season for this team.
Right.
We're just now talking about it resulting.
Well, no team is, Auburn hasn't allowed more than 24. They're only, I think, maybe two other teams nationally that not allowed more than 24 points in a single game this year.
And again, Auburn's been playing high-quality opponents. So, I mean, that's been a constant all season. I would think that and it's not like Ashton had overwhelming numbers. And Hugh Freeze mentioned that Ashton left a touchdown on the board when he didn't see an open Malcolm Simmons in the red zone. But I thought, look, when Jackson Arnold makes that, when Jackson Arnold,
when he threw the pick six,
throws the pick six in the red zone, and something we had said and something Hugh Freeze had said was, with Jackson Arnold, there are moments where he looks like a guy that you can win with at the quarterback position, but unfortunately, when you think about times in a football game where the pressure is ratcheted up for a quarterback, third down, two-minute drill, fourth quarter, overtime, red zone, goal to go, those were consistently moments where Jackson was leaving plays out there, where was not doing enough. And it was not just against Arkansas. Like, that had been a problem, and that had been a topic of conversation all season long with Jackson, and the interception in the red zone to give Arkansas the 11-point lead. Yeah, I mean, Hugh Freeze, I asked him about it today, Bill. Like, how hard was it to fight off the feelings of here we go again?
Yeah, and he even mentioned that. And I would have loved for him to go a little further when he said, and he even asked in their staff meeting, he asked, how many of you guys felt like after the pick six, here we go again? And he said he thought his coaches were honest. I wonder, I don't want to know who, but I wonder how many hands went, yeah, I did.
How about not zero? Yeah, this would be my question.
I feel very strongly it wasn't zero.
Yeah, I think some hands probably went up when he asked that question, and for Hugh Freeze to decide in that moment, you know, he'd said for weeks Jackson was close. Jackson was someone that was, you know, almost making enough plays to win, and he felt like Jackson was on the verge, and then I think finally he saw, at least for that game, he saw enough to make the change to Ashton Daniels. And after Ashton Daniels goes in, and again, the offensive and the passing numbers aren't overwhelming with Daniels. They're good.
No, but Auburn moved the ball and moved it well enough to be able to go down. Now, again, Auburn's struggling in the red zone. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had 33 points, but 7 came on a pick six, 6 came on field goals, and Auburn goes 0-for-6 in the red zone on touchdowns.
Yeah.
They go 5-for-6 in the red zone with field goals and that pick six. But that is a continuing concern for Auburn. But no, Ashton didn't turn it over. I thought he looked, as Hugh Freeze said, poised. I thought he was pretty cool. He looked pretty cool and calm back there and running the offense. I thought was fine. But
things could look at times with Jackson. Things could look frantic. Or
they could, although
panicked. Not all the time.
Yeah, and I don't know that I would say things looked frantic or panicked with Jackson against Arkansas. That's the other thing. I mean, this is the worst defense. This may be the worst defense Auburn's going to play. It's definitely the worst SEC defense. Not only that Auburn will play, but it's the worst defense in the Southeastern Conference. But still, good to see Ashton come in and Auburn come from behind. But then today, the very first question to Hugh Freeze is about the quarterback situation, and Hugh Freeze saying competition. You know, he talked about competition being good for the players, and there will be an open competition. Would not commit to who his starting quarterback will be Saturday night against Kentucky.
Yeah, and I want to I've seen a lot of folks reacting negatively to that, and I understand it. Skarbinski wrote something on Twitter along the lines of, you haven't seen enough in 8 games now that you need a couple of days of practice to evaluate your quarterback before Saturday night. I would hope that the belief is Ashton did enough against Arkansas to warrant he needs to play his way out of the job. Now, maybe he does that in practice this week, but I would hope he gets the first shot Saturday night, and he gets a chance to show that he either can provide even moderately better quarterback play, which, as we've said before, Bill, even moderately better quarterback play could have changed Auburn's win-loss record in conference play
right now,
these last 4 games, or these last 5
games.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. I mean, Auburn, you would think Auburn could have 5 or 6 wins instead of being 4-4 going in. However, as I said, Auburn's not going to see another defense as porous as Arkansas's for the rest of the conference schedule, for sure. And, I mean, we will see. Kentucky's defense is – Oh, it's light years ahead of Arkansas.
I did think that it was a little bit telling later on in the press conference when Hugh Freeze talked about the need for Jackson to stay ready no matter what his role is.
Right.
That sort of indicated...
That indicates that that right now it doesn't look like he's at the top of the list, top of the depth chart.
Yeah, that would be kind of the message to me would be that's the message to a guy who was the starter and could very well be the starter again, but may not be the starter again this Saturday. And so I would we'll see. But I'm curious to see and with Ashton Daniels, something that has come up on the show, the question of what took so long? If you think Ashton Daniels gives you a better chance to win than Jackson Arnold, why did it take you 7.5 games to make that change?
Yeah, Hugh Freeze explained a little of that today when he was asked about his redshirting, saying he got here late. You know, he wasn't here until the summer. And I don't think they felt they knew enough about him just from workouts and practice.
The version of the story we had heard, I think, goes along with the version of the story Hugh Freeze told post-game on Saturday, which was because of Ashton Daniels' late arrival, because he had to stay at Stanford and graduate, because of his late arrival, he was way behind in preseason.
Right.
And they didn't think he was a real option to play until A&M or Oklahoma, probably A&M, because it was Oklahoma, the week after Oklahoma is what Hugh Freeze said. So that would be going into A&M was the first time they thought they had Ashton Daniels at a point where he could give them a real chance to win if they put him in the game. And that also goes along with when you start to see a little bit more of Ashton Daniels getting even second team reps in practice on Tuesdays. That was sort of when you started to see a little bit more of him rather than Deuce as the next guy up at some of these drills. And then, you know, the last couple of weeks, we've wondered, you know, I think more than one occasion, it felt like there was a drive where it's like, all right, Jackson, make some plays, or we need to go see somebody else at quarterback. That last drive Jackson had against Arkansas was one of those drives, that red zone possession, and instead it's a turnover, and I guess that was and the decision is, you know, that the offense at that point needs a spark.
I still wonder why did all I don't know who it was trying to explain that I was reading. Well, Auburn struggled to run in the red zone. Auburn didn't attempt to run sometimes. Was that not a drive where Auburn ran for 7 or 8 consecutive plays, then threw?
Yep. That's correct. Yeah, and you can
Arkansas's rush defense is terrible.
And that's a play where Jackson has the option to hand off and kept it and pulled it down for the quick pass instead. But that doesn't absolve the play caller. Just because you've called a play with a run option.
No, that's exactly right.
Not the same thing as calling a play
just
where you
call
say,
a run.
Yeah, where you call not the same
call
thing
a run.
As saying dive.
And Auburn did run in Jeremiah Cobb with his career game. So, I mean, they're obviously with a win, there's some positives to look at. There's still some concerns, no question about that. I mean, the Auburn offense did better than they have done. I mean, 26 points is what the offense really accounted for. But the 33 points, fewest that Arkansas has allowed in SEC play, the 380 yards Auburn had, about 150 yards a game less than Arkansas is allowing on a per-game basis. So the offense still has some improving that must be done for them to be able to, not just compete, but be able to win against these last three SEC opponents.
Yeah, curious to see what they do this week and what they can do Saturday night against Kentucky to sort of, you know, continue to build momentum as an offense, because you've got two SEC games after that and they're both against ranked teams right now, both against teams that have their eye on the playoff.
Both against top 10 teams, as a matter of fact. So,
and one of those teams you're used to talking about
as
an SEC championship game contender and a playoff contender and a team that has
the other one you're not. Not at all. I mean, it is the first time in decades that there's been this kind of talk around Vanderbilt football.
And we did learn that that one's a that's an afternoon game.
Yeah, it's at 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
right?
3 o'clock 3 o'clock game. I forget the network.
I think it's SEC Network.
Oh, okay. So yeah, SEC Network's going to have Auburn and Vandy in a couple of weeks. Kentucky is a night game. 6:30 game this Saturday night. But I'm curious to see, and something else that I think folks will be wondering about is, you know, how careful are they with Cam Coleman, and how much Cam Coleman is, you know, is he at full strength?
Yeah, I
on
mean,
Saturday night after
good to hear scary, that it wasn't a high ankle sprain.
Oh, I'll tell you, the thing you were worried about, I think, with a spill like that's the Achilles.
Yeah.
Right? The thought that, like, you could get, because at the end you just worry with a Cam Coleman type, if he hurt the Achilles, Bill, like, you do the math on how long before he could be Cam Coleman again, potentially, mm-hmm. and it's just like, oh, no, like,
yeah,
catastrophic.
Yeah, coming off one of the highlight catches of his career where I still don't know why there wasn't a flag.
Yeah, there were several plays in that game. I brought it up to Justin Ferguson because Ferg was there. And it's like, there were several plays in that game where I guess because the catch was made, the referees just decided, you know
there
what?
There should have been flags flying all over the place. And my wife had to run somewhere and was on her way home. And then so I didn't get to hear it live, but she heard Andy's call. And then on the post game, they ran Andy's call, which was perfectly legit because, oh, that's interference. No, it's a touchdown.
I believe Andy guessed.
Incomplete. Yes. Oh, that's it. Oh, that
incomplete interference.
Well, it was interference.
No, he caught
incomplete.
It. It's a
he caught it. It's a touchdown. But I mean, that's what it was because there was no way with a guy pulling him down, pulling his left arm down, that you thought he'd be able to make that catch.
Was a flag thrown on the moonshot to Singleton?
No.
Which is also crazy,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
on the
48 yarder,
which
felt like, I mean, and I asked Ferg because Ferg was there in the press box, like, how high up did that ball? Because it left the TV camera.
Yeah,
like you had no idea on the TV. Like so the deep ball from Daniels to Eric.
Punt. It was like a punt.
I mean, just and he comes down with that one. So yeah, I want to see. And you know, and that's something else that you would think. And this is not an excuse. But you would think that Cam Coleman would factor heavily into Auburn's red zone plans.
Yeah, you would sure think so.
And so the fact that Auburn came up empty time and time again in a game where he was either injured or limited, right? Like that would be let's see what it looks like with Daniels, assuming it's Daniels, and the healthy assortment of receivers. Will he have that group? You know, will he have Cam Coleman at full speed this week, and will he have Cam Coleman at full speed for the rest of the season remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's no question you can't be settling for three pointers.
No,
in the red zone. There are times like you got deep field goals, and that's you salvage a drive that stalls out. You know, at the 30 something,
yeah,
whatever
30 yard line. So yeah.
You get in the red zone, you really want to finish those drives with touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're just underway. Need to get to our first break. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com will be joining us when they get done with their podcast. He should be joining us as well. Brian and I, by the way, sat next to each other there for the banana ball performance, which was a lot more. I mean, it was fun. It was more fun than I thought it would be.
I'm told it's a blast in person.
It was
an absolute
blast.
It
was. Yeah. We can talk about that. Obviously, there's other things to talk about. Another coach moving on from the Southeastern Conference as Brian Kelly is out at LSU. We'll talk about that and more. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Dan, and we welcome in Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. B-Matt, how's it going?
Pull this mic closer. It is going pretty good, you know. I was a little surprised that Auburn does not have a starting quarterback at the moment.
Oh, come on. Let's face it. You and I weren't that surprised at all.
Okay, okay.
We're sitting around a table before the press conference, mm-hmm. and Hoke's like, oh, he's going to name Ashton Daniels. And Ben Bryan and I are like, I don't know about that.
But I'm still surprised. Even though I'm not surprised, I am surprised. I don't understand it. It's just, I don't know.
I mentioned earlier, Brian, I thought the comments about Jackson needing to stay ready no matter what his role is sort of indicate to me like that's an opportunity to read between the lines as to where this thing might be going for Saturday.
Sure.
But you're right. You're right. I mean, it's – and I also thought that even though the numbers weren't overwhelming, you know, Ashton probably did enough to get another week and play his way out of the job if that's you know what happens. But we'll see what they decide to do this week. Maybe some of that's strategic to keep Stoops and his group guessing.
I just think that the starting quarterback is an important position that the entire team responds to. I think Ashton Daniels, even though you know he didn't throw for 300 yards or anything crazy like that, he came in with Auburn trailing 21-10.
Yeah,
they won 33-24. That's 23-3.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they won, something Auburn hasn't done his previous four games.
The only thing I was telling Dan, the only thing that I would pump the brakes a little bit on is that's Arkansas's defense.
Yeah, well, I know.
But he still did the job.
He deserves
the first shot.
He absolutely does. And by doing this, by splitting the reps, you are cutting away his first team reps that he would be getting. Mm-hmm. Full reps preparing for this game, this SEC game that Auburn needs to win. And before anybody assumes that Auburn is going to beat Kentucky, you know, Hugh Freeze doesn't always win against teams at home that he's supposed to win against.
No, and you know what? Now, Saturday was an exception, but Kentucky's been close in a couple of ball games, too.
They just need a spark. They just need to get over that hump.
There was talk this past week that Jackson and Ashton had split reps, which I found, I mean, the talk going into the game, which they mentioned on the TV broadcast, and then Hugh Freeze said something after the game, that there was always a plan to play Ashton. Like, that Ashton, there was all, that like, kind of no matter how Jackson played, they wanted to get Ashton some reps against Arkansas, which again, not to read too much into what they say as opposed to what they do. But that was, maybe Ashton's been taking some more first team reps than we realized for a while.
Well, he looked pretty comfortable out there, didn't he?
He looked fine. He looked comfortable. He ran the ball well, which Jackson also does well. And he didn't have any turnovers. And, you know, the situation in the fourth quarter, as Hugh Freeze described, as he said, is they decided to play really conservative when Auburn got those turnovers and just take the field goals. Whether that was right or wrong, that's what he said they did. So, again, you can't really judge Ashton completely on what happened in the second half. But, again, the only thing I'm judging him on is Auburn won after losing mm-hmm. four.
Right.
And they outscored him 23-3.
And,
I mean,
Kentucky's next. They need to take care of business Saturday night. That's the next one. And, you know, for people that I don't know how many people I've read, and I've heard from a couple of them as well, going, look, LSU fires Brian Kelly, they're 5-3.
Right.
Why isn't Auburn doing something? Well, if you didn't make a move last week, you're definitely not making a move this week.
Right.
And then you're extending it. Oh. And if you beat Kentucky, then you won't make a move next week. And if you beat Vandy, then you won't make a move then. I mean, that's the way it is.
I think we were talking about it a little bit before you got here, Brian. I think if you were to beat Kentucky and Vanderbilt, especially if Vanderbilt's coming in, what could Vanderbilt's
record
be?
You win the next three ball games, I'd say unless you have an embarrassment at home against Alabama, then you're probably not seeing
a
change.
That's a big old if.
When you look at this one, then the next one, these are absolute musts.
Oh yeah, they are for Hugh Freeze. I would feel like.
Yes.
I mean, I think Kentucky is certainly a winnable game. I look at Vanderbilt and I see that being a well-coached team in every single phase of the game. And I don't feel like Auburn is that, and I don't think they have much of a shot in Nashville. But we'll see. Prove me wrong.
Yeah, I don't think Vandy's any more talented than the teams that Auburn has played very well against. But I think
if you line them up, Auburn probably has some talent advantage.
Yep. All right, 334-321-1390. We'll get a call or two before we get to our bottom of the hour break. And Crawford gets us started. Hey, Crawford.
What's up, Crawdad?
Hey, guys. It's been a while, but I've been too pissed off to call because of what happened last 5 or 6 weeks. Let me start by saying the officiating in the SEC can't get any worse. You need to get rid of these accountants and CPAs and lawyers and salesmen and get full-time referees. They are absolutely horrible. It's not going to get any better.
They're terrible calls all over, Crawford. There's no question.
I mean, just not just Auburn games. No. It's everywhere, Bill. I mean, it's absurd. And the why in the hell have replay if you're not going to force the correct call?
That's a great question.
That's the way it is. And unfortunately, Hugh's DNA is not going to let him change what he does around the goal line. He's got to throw the damn ball. He's got to throw it. We run the ball on the goal line. We don't have to worry about a comeback in the fourth quarter. I'm telling you, it's absurd, and I don't see him changing. I don't know who handles his press conferences, but what should have been said is that we love Jackson Arnold. He is a class man, but it's time to move on, and he's had his time. We're going to Ashton Daniels at quarterback. That's what should have been said, and if Jackson Arnold starts Saturday night, you're going to have damn mutiny, I'm telling you.
Oh, you'll hear it.
And Crawford,
I love to quote Unforgiven. You know, deserves got nothing to do with it in these situations. But I think Ashton Daniels did enough to deserve a week as QB1 and a starting gig Saturday night.
He showed poise. I was very impressed. But the calls around the goal line suck. We've got to run the damn ball. We run the ball, and it's not even a contest, and we don't have to make that, like I said, big comeback in the fourth quarter. So, love y'all as always. I will try to not be as foreign in the future. Hopefully, we can win a couple of damn games.
Well, that would be nice, Crawford.
All right. Thank y'all, guys.
We'll get to Uncle Ollie before we get to our bottom of the hour break. What's up, Unc?
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
All right.
So, I think I will bet my bottom dollar Ashton Daniels starts Saturday. What good does it do to announce? I mean, for all you're doing is just telling Kentucky. So at least they have to at least study both quarterbacks. I think he's going to start. I just see no reason to announce it other than, you know, the team's going to know. I mean, they watch practice. They're at practice. They're going to know who's going to be the quarterback Saturday. I just don't see a reason to announce it. I know it's gamesmanship, but I think that's what it's about. I mean, why give Kentucky any kind of clue as to what's going to happen? Make them study both quarterbacks. They may anyway, I agree, but that's why I don't think he's announced it. I think he knows who's going to start Saturday.
I mean, maybe, but I don't feel that way, and I think the part about them splitting – reps during practice is probably true. Hugh Freeze has, in his past, been really open about things and you know, not into really hiding things or playing those kind of games. But, you know, you never know. I'm not saying it is or isn't. That's just not the feeling I got.
The quote at the towards the end of the press conference that I've mentioned a couple times that I thought was interesting, he said, quote, "I think Jackson is very mature. We had a great conversation. He came to work today ready to roll. I gave him the example of whatever happens come Saturday, you have to be ready, whether you roll out there on the first possession or the third possession or after the half or whatever that ends up being. You owe yourself and to this team to be ready, and he's a mature kid and obviously is going to compete like heck this week to prove that he should lead us on that first drive again. I think he'll handle it well whenever the circumstances come," unquote. Yeah, I think part of that message might have been if you decide to go with Ashton and you sort of dismiss Jackson, you know, what happens if Ashton gets hurt, right?
Like, or really struggles.
Or really struggles. Like, I think there is the possibility that you may need to go back to Ashton, or you may need to go back to Jackson. But I would agree. I would think that it would be. I'd be a little bit surprised not to see Ashton start the game Saturday.
And the problem that we're fixing to run into as Auburn fans in terms of Hugh Freeze, we're starting to get pushed down the pecking order when it comes to coaches.
You talking about job potential? You talking about potential job openings?
I'm nervous because, and let's be honest, as big an Auburn fan as I am, if you're a big time coach out there, you're probably, unless we can just like buy them. You know, LSU, Florida, Penn State. I mean, they're going to be just a better offer for somebody. I'm afraid of. And here's what I mean by that. My guy would be John Summerall. Well, we got three teams ahead of us that stand a way better chance to get. I just don't want to end up with crumbs.
Yeah, I understand. Two of those three teams you mentioned, I don't, you know, John Summerall to me doesn't fit what Florida is looking for. I don't know that he does. I'm not sure about Penn State, but I think they're looking in other directions right now. And I think LSU's got some other, at least dream guys at the top of their list. I would think John Summerall, if Auburn jobs came open, Auburn's a better fit for both parties than either LSU or Florida.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm LSU's the one that scares me, and they're going to swing for the fences and miss, and I'm scared he's their second choice.
Well, I just wonder, and I'm looking forward to hearing from Tex, because I have heard two completely different stories from people that usually know what they're talking about. One is, yep, all right, so Brian Kelly and his staff, that's going to cost $65 million. And they're going after, you know, they could make...
$53 million, right?
Huh? His is 53, okay. But the rest of the staff
make it up to 65. Right, you got the staff. Okay, yeah.
All right, but I'm hearing from, you know, I think Matt Moscona and, it wasn't Moscona, it was somebody else saying, LSU can offer Nick Saban $20 million a year. But I'm hearing from other people, LSU is in a tight situation money-wise because of Scott Woodward, and that they don't have the resources to go for a high-money coach. So hopefully we get a chance to hear from Tex, because he's got some context down there in Baton Rouge.
So Ross Dellinger's story mentions, the first official says, he quotes two anonymous LSU officials at the end. One, quote, "I don't know where this money comes from." The other one, quote, "You can always find the money," unquote.
So we'll see. But yeah, it is crazy. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on the on this Monday following Auburn's win over Arkansas this past weekend. What was the biggest surprise around college football to you guys?
I mean, I think the way A&M dispatched with LSU and the fact that, I mean, because we wondered – boy, could Brian Kelly be in trouble if he loses that one with some of the games? Like, we didn't think it was
LSU.
Yeah, we didn't think it was new coach trouble.
Like, there were some rough picks this week.
Yeah, we thought Brian Kelly might feel some heat if LSU were to lose that game because
they were up 18-14. Next thing you know, they've given up 35 unanswered points in the second half.
Given up's probably the right way to phrase it. I mean, now, like we were saying in the previous segment, now you've got LSU paying one of the biggest buyouts in the history of college football to fire a coach who was, is he 35-14? Is that right?
34-14.
He was 34-14 at LSU.
10-9 his first 3 years, and then 5-3 this year.
And just a decision that it was, and you know what it feels like? It feels a little bit like Dan Mullen getting fired, where the thinking that, the win-loss record makes you wonder if it's the right move, but the climate right now feels, or even McIlwain. McIlwain would be another one where it's like McIlwain's win-loss record at Florida is pretty good. But when they decided to fire him, the situation felt pretty unsustainable.
Well,
and it sounds like, based on what you saw on the field Saturday night and then what you heard about in the subsequent day and a half, made that situation sound pretty unsustainable too.
A lot of it, Brian Kelly brought it on himself. A lot of it he did. I mean, first of all, it felt like a very odd hire, splashy, but never felt like a good fit. From his attempted fake Cajun to the bluster that he had and how he bristled at any questions. I mean, look, the LSU offense has struggled all year long, and he has been hot at anyone who's asked him a question. But preseason, he talked. What did he say? That he said, they're taking receipts, and he in one of his preseason press conferences, we're taking receipts, and we'll see you at the national championship.
Right.
Okay, if you're going to put that out there, you can't have lost three games before the end of October.
And that's not to say, like, you don't have to be a Southerner to win as an SEC
Nick Saban,
coach.
Nick Saban wasn't born and raised in the South.
Yeah, Urban Meyer isn't from the South, last time I checked, and he won a bunch of SEC championships and a couple of national titles. Like, doesn't have to. Lane Kiffin isn't anybody's idea of he grew up all over, he's a pretty continental guy.
Mm-hmm.
But Brian Kelly, I think there was this idea that he's coming in with and between his experience and the fact that he can recruit a different kind of player to LSU than he could at Notre Dame, it's all gonna fall into place. And it is. It's a reminder that fit matters.
Oh, yes.
And you know, between, I think you heard accusations of arrogance.
Yes.
More with Kelly than you did with a lot of other SEC coaches, and the idea that look, you win enough, maybe you can earn arrogance, but You're not gonna what you did at Notre Dame.
That doesn't mean squat.
Does not earn you.
No,
yeah, does
in
not
this league.
Did not earn it. At LSU and now you look and Brian Kelly breaks the string of coaches who won national championships at LSU.
Yeah, that's right.
Nick Saban won one. Les Miles won one.
Yeah. Coach
Ed,
Joe.
Ed Orgeron won one, and now Brian Kelly is the first LSU coach since DiNardo to not win a national championship during his tenure at LSU. And one would think there's going to be a pretty significant amount of pressure on the next guy.
The talent is going to be available and generally going to be there at LSU for them to be able to compete. That was a surprise. The game and then the follow up to that game was a big surprise from Saturday night.
I'd still be shocked if they weren't. And I know there are questions about the money. I'd still be shocked if they weren't big game hunting.
Well, they're going to be big game hunting, but I mean, pointed out. I mean, look at the hires that LSU and Florida have made through the years and where those coaches came from. How many of them were – Brian Kelly was.
Yeah.
He was sort of the exception to the rule. The rest of them weren't big names when they were hired.
Well, Saban and Les Miles were major conference coaches, but they weren't any more than – you're right. I mean, Saban was at Michigan State.
Saban was at Michigan State.
Les Miles was at Oklahoma State.
Right.
Like, they were – Orgeron had been
– They weren't the kinds of names that are going to be tossed out there now. You know, they're not – I mean, Marcus Freeman – and, all right, I'm seeing, everybody's got Marcus Freeman on their list. I guess they figure Brian Kelly leads Notre Dame than anybody will.
Your leaderboard, according to a lot of odds makers and such, you know, the names that you hear on hot boards, Lane Kiffin
and Marcus Freeman are at the top of both LSU and Florida's list.
John Sumrall's name is being linked to the LSU job.
Dan
more than
Lanning.
The Florida. What do you think of Sumrall as a candidate at LSU? Because he's at Tulane winning right now.
They know about him. Mm-hmm. Good work. And I wouldn't rule that out.
If he's good enough for Auburn, he should be good enough for everybody.
Yeah, I would think.
Who knows?
A lot of folks are mentioning Joe Brady, who was the quarterback's coach when Joe Burrow had that tremendous season in 2019. He's been in the NFL for the last couple of seasons, currently with the Buffalo Bills. That's a name that folks have tossed out there potentially as a guy who could make sense. But I would think.
Can you guarantee if you have Joe Brady, you've got the receivers that he had,
and a quarterback like Joe Burrow? No, I don't know if anyone can guarantee anything like that. Keep hearing James Franklin as a candidate at these different jobs.
LSU,
just anytime a job opens up, I.
Well, yeah, I mean he's won. I think he'd be a candidate a lot of places. I don't know that LSU or Florida are going to jump to hire James Franklin.
Yeah,
because both of them expect to win more than Franklin won at Penn State.
Kelly was the first example, I think, in a while, maybe ever, of LSU poaching from schools that were in contention for national championships recently and grabbing a coach that way. Because you didn't see that with that. That wasn't.
No.
You know, that didn't just, you know, and if they were to do that, like, and Kiffin would probably be the target if they were trying to do something like that. Now, maybe Marcus Freeman. Although the thought of going, again, like, you don't want to just.
Go back.
No, I don't want to. Because they're different coaches.
That's the thought. Like, oh, Penn State's going to go get Clark Lee. So they can keep getting Vandy coaches.
I was going to say, keep going back to back. Or if Auburn's going to go get another.
That'd be Lane if you go back to Ole Miss.
Another Ole Miss coach. Or Orgeron, right? There's a couple former Ole Miss coaches out there that you could call up. The thought that LSU would go would go get Notre Dame's coach again, like, and keep doing it that way. No, it just feels out of the question, but. But yeah, where would you say, money aside, or I guess rumored money problems aside, where is, and I want to ask both of you this, like, where is LSU on the hierarchy of jobs? Like, where would you say that?
The ones
that is,
available now?
Right there at the top?
LSU is number one.
In college football. Like, LSU is a top blank job in
LSU
college football.
LSU, Florida, Penn State are the top three.
Would you say they're all top 10 jobs?
Probably. I mean, the top 10 may have 12 teams if you break it down, but yeah, they're top 10 jobs.
Yeah,
you usually don't see three top 10 jobs open at the same time. And LSU, I mean, some folks would tell you, with local resources and the lack of competition in the state for those resources, like some there have been times when it's a top 5 job, right, in college football because
you have one state, you have the highest or second highest per capita number of college future NFL players in that state. So just right there, you've got it. And then you look at their past history. I think they've won 3 national championships with their last 3 coaches.
Before Brian Kelly.
And 2 of those coaches were fired. So even not-so-good coaches can go to LSU and win national championships, not just once, but back-to-back. That tells me a lot about that school's potential and how good it can be with the right coach in charge.
Yep, we'd love to hear from you. We need to get to our final break of hour number 1. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive at AU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes of hour number 1 here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com.
We were just talking about the Arizona State score didn't end up looking that bad. Kenny Dillingham's been mentioned for some of these jobs.
Right.
And Houston was up big, but Arizona State fought back, only lost by 8. There were some ugly Big 12 scores this weekend, my friend, including Kansas State went to Kansas, rolled Texas Tech, destroyed Oklahoma State.
On that one too.
And then Dion, tough year 3 at Colorado. Utah was up 43-0 at the half, 53-7.
I didn't even know the final score. I saw the score just before half. I think it was 40-0.
A lot of Colorado people probably didn't even know the final score either, Bill, and it's 43-0 at the half. I believe Colorado had negative total yards pretty deep into pretty deep into the football game. So, yeah, it's some pretty high profile. I mean, we're just talking about Brian Kelly. some pretty high profile hires have gone sideways in college football.
Is that 8 Power 4 schools now that have made changes here before the end of October?
That sounds right.
Yeah, that is crazy. And you know, again, people are wondering. Well, there will be more. There will be more. I mean, who knows how many? That's 3 SEC. I think they're liable to be at least a couple more in the SEC.
We could be talking about one here. Who knows?
Well, again, it's win in advance. Yeah. That's sort of the way it is right now.
Kirby was doing, I think it was his press conference today, where he was asked about Brian Kelly. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, when I coached, Kirby's quote was, when I coached at LSU, somebody said, that's not your office, you're borrowing it. Like, remember that. That's right. That's how it works there at LSU. And he said, yeah, if you don't win, you don't get to be there very long.
Yeah, if you don't win enough. Again, his worst year was 9 wins. Worst full year was 9 wins at LSU.
We had all 16 coaches back for media days. Yeah. This past
we may be closer to half next year.
Yep.
I'd say there's going to be at least over a third, or at least around a third. All right, we'll get to our top of the hour break. Got another hour to go. We'll get Brian's Monday Musings. We'll talk a little bit about the banana ball experience.
Yes,
on Saturday night as well. Coming up in hour number 2 of the Monday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number 2 here of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com in the studio. Drew at the controls. We'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Obviously, we talked a good bit of football there in hour number 1 with Auburn's win over Arkansas. The status, the situation at quarterback, which right now, according to Hugh Freeze, will be determined based on the competition this week between Ashton Daniels and Jackson Arnold.
Okay.
Yeah, we will see.
Good for you. Congratulations.
And we talked about LSU moving on from Brian Kelly. Eight Power 4 coaching openings around the country here before the end of November. Let's see. Mentioned just before the end of the show, Brian and I were there.
We were
with that huge crowd, great crowd on Saturday night over at Plainsman Park for the banana ball experience. And Brian, there's no question, I had more fun than I thought I would. I mean, I was thinking, well, we'll see what this is all about. I've watched clips and things like that, but it's nothing like being there and sort of experiencing what we saw.
No, I was skeptical for sure. You know, I'm a 58-year-old man. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
But that was really impressive. I had a fun time. And, you know, it's not like we were in the middle of it. We're way down the right field line.
You're right.
But it was still entertaining and fun. And I would imagine if you're down in the middle of it, that was even more fun with all the stuff they had going on. And if I was at the point in my life where I was, you know, a father of kids, you know, at that age, that would be something that would be near the top of my list of an experience I would want to get.
Now, Brian, could I interest you in a version of this?
Yes.
But all the music is from like 1991 to 2002 or something like that?
Well, 1970.
Okay. I was going to say 1985, 85 to 98 or something like that.
It was an unbelievable mix of music they had.
We had some 70s, 80s. Definitely heard some Michael Jackson.
We had country. We had hip-hop.
I think we started out with Hank Williams Jr., if I don't remember.
We did. We had a little family tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think my gimmick as a member of the Bananas would be all Steely Dan music. I think that's what I would want is, you know, see a lot of you know, kids today love Gaucho, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Let me tell you what, kudos to the Auburn players who
they were all in too.
You know, they were saying Butch and they were saying after the game they had an hour and a half rehearsal on Friday, and I would have thought they had days of rehearsal as good a job as they did. But no, it was a blast. It really was. And there was some good baseball, too.
Yep. Bristol Carter made the between the legs catch, which was pretty cool.
And Butch Thompson had said before the game, one of the things was this is a game where you've got to shove it. You've got to throw strikes. And you learn that with how well the Bananas take advantage of a walk. Because you know what they do on a walk, Dan?
Oh,
they just take off running.
When there is a walk, sprint, right? The batter can go, the runner can go as far as he can before. And the thing is, he can keep going until all nine players in the field have touched the ball. Everybody. So what they do, and they only had a couple of walks. When they had walks, their outfielders sprinted in toward the middle of the diamond so they could just sort of play like hot potato and get the ball back. And they held Auburn players. I don't know. I don't recall. Maybe one got to second, but they held Auburn players at first, and nearly every Bananas player was at least to second and a couple of times to third before every player had touched the ball for Auburn, and that ended up costing them the game.
Well, that's not a very familiar aspect of the Auburn, the fire drill version of the walk there.
No, but the thing is, it teaches you throw strikes. So it was a blast, and yeah, I'm glad I got a chance to be there. So
yeah, it was great.
A fun Saturday night. Speaking of baseball, your Dodgers splitting in Toronto and not going home, looking to go up 2-1 tonight.
Yeah, hopefully. I think it's been game two was really exciting stuff. Game one got away from the Dodgers and it was an offensive explosion by the Jays and that crowd in Toronto is top notch. They're really excited about the World Series. Nat comes back to LA. Like I said, wanted this thing split. Wasn't trying to get greedy and win them both in Toronto. And let's see what the Dodgers can do at home. Big start tonight for Glasnow and going up against somebody who's pitched in some big games before, too.
Yeah, Max will be on the mound for the Jays.
Yeah, after the Jays went with the kid in Yesavage, who was just brilliant. Now they're going with someone who's pitched in a few more games than Yesavage in his career.
All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Sky Bar. Let's get to it. And John is up first this hour. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Good Monday to y'all.
Yeah, back at you.
Had a couple questions on the coaching carousel, just real quick. I was looking at Arkansas, and that was there might have been fall festivals this weekend in Auburn that were more well attended than Razorback Stadium.
I think they were probably. Yeah. It looked like they were more at Plainsman Park than they were there at Razorback Stadium.
Syrup sopping probably outdrew.
I'm telling
outdrew
syrup,
Arkansas. Yeah.
Well, it got me thinking. That's a program that, in my opinion, needs just fundamental change. And just two quick pointers. A name I haven't thought brought up, and it would follow kind of their line of thinking in bringing Calipari in for basketball. I wonder if they would make a run at somebody like a Dabo for football. And my second question would be, Alabama. Everybody's talking about Auburn and Freeze and that situation. I think Alabama's in a tougher situation with the Boer. He's making $10 million. If they're going to want to keep him, I would think they're going to have to offer him considerably more money. What did y'all's thoughts on both of those? Thank you.
That's interesting. I don't know. I think Alabama would be reluctant to give him a raise until they get to the playoffs and make a run in the playoffs. I think they're still competitive with the salaries there with DeBoer.
Do you think there's concern of DeBoer leaving for another college job? I would think if the NFL came knocking, Alabama would have something to worry about. Like, but I think it would be surprising. Look, if things got chilly at Alabama between DeBoer and the athletic department, or if he started losing games or
something. Lose a couple more games this year then maybe.
And then maybe Penn State looks like greener pastures. But I think absent that, like if he's got the support of the people who matter at Alabama – it's tough to imagine jumping to another college football job. I know there could be some financial considerations, but if he wins, like you said, if he wins, the money will be there. Like, the contract won't be a problem.
Oh, yeah. And as far as Arkansas, you mentioned, I just don't see Dabo. leaving Clemson for Arkansas. I could see maybe Jimbo.
It's a different
being a possibility at Arkansas.
It's a different.
He wants back in somewhere.
Arkansas basketball in the hierarchy of SEC programs is different than Arkansas football.
Yes.
And I think trying to lure a coach who has a good thing going right now to Arkansas is going to be a tough sell just because of how often you're sort of outmanned from a program standpoint every week on that schedule. Like, I think it's going to – yeah, Jimbo's one thing because Jimbo – a guy like Jimbo or a guy like John Gruden, you know, desperate to get into the SEC.
And not having to be paid $10 million a year now.
If James Franklin really wanted to coach in the SEC next year and he wasn't being all that picky about what school in the conference, was his choice. People keep talking about Rhett Lashley because he has those ties to Arkansas, but I think trying to poach somebody top tier in football, it's about more than just a money offer too, right? It's about being able to provide the sort of support for a program that would lead them, that would give them a chance to win enough games every year.
I'm of the mind that just about, well, I would say any school in the SEC, if they find the right coach, they can be a really good program.
Agreed.
I think Vanderbilt and Ole Miss are great examples of this, right? Lane Kiffin is a really good head coach. I'm not saying he's going to win the national championship, but he's turned Ole Miss into a top 10 caliber program. They have not been that for most of the years that I've been alive. Vanderbilt has been the laughingstock of the SEC for decades upon decades, a doormat, an automatic win, and look at them now. They are a top 10 caliber team who may be one of the best coach teams in the country and is in, you know, there's a possibility they're a playoff team this year, which is really incredible.
Oh, yeah, it's very, very much so. I mean, but yes, you have to get the right guy.
Yep. And you have to support
him. And it's easier said than done because there are been a lot of big name hires at a lot of places that people just were sure
that was
going to work. And I mean, now
every single year it happens and they fail.
Here's one that we haven't talked about this one today, but the buzz going into the weekend. And I wondered if Mississippi State had been able to hang on, if you'd be hearing even more about Steve Sarkisian and the interest he has in the Tennessee Titans or moving on to the NFL.
Yeah. I think he's gone. There's just too many rumors going
things
on
ain't
about
working
him.
I mean, so look at the resources Texas has, and they have gone out and they have gone big and brought in the big names. Yep. They've had those home run hires.
That could be another big hire
that have turned out into nothing.
Hey.
Imagine that one.
Vandy's going to beat them on Saturday.
Yes.
Vandy's going to beat them on Saturday. Like, mark it down. Vandy's winning that game on Saturday. And then, the playoff bubble, the SC Championship game bubble bursts at Texas.
Your preseason number one team.
And you could be talking about, you could be very well talking about Sarkisian as an NFL guy. Honestly, Sarkisian and Lane both have seemed like guys to me that would make a ton of sense if you're an NFL GM.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
That wants the bet. Like, if and it's trickled down to college football.
And Lane is a great talent evaluator, but he's not a great recruiter. So that would seem like it would fit even more.
Yeah.
In the NFL.
Although I would say for a guy who's not necessarily a great recruiter, he finds.
That's what I mean. Evaluate. He knows who he wants.
And he finds
quarterback
some guys.
Especially.
He's got a little bit of that Bruce Pearl being able to go get guys. And he had to do this at the beginning at Ole Miss.
Yep.
When you have to go win with guys, like you think about what Bruce Pearl did to get the thing rolling at Auburn. The thought that you went out and had to find a point guard. But because of your status and your program's hierarchy in the conference, you had to find a point guard nobody else in the league wanted, and you had to go win with him, right? Jared Harper did not have another SEC offer. Like, Kiffin had to do stuff like that at the beginning of the Ole Miss thing to get it rolling. And I would think that Arkansas's next coach is probably going to have to be somebody who, at the beginning at least, can do less with more. Now, you know, maybe eventually you can change that, but yeah, either you're going to need to find a coach who has specialized in taking over disaster zones and turning them around, or you need to go find a great coach on the clearance rack for some reason. That could be Jimbo, that could be Lane Kiffin, that could be James Franklin, you know, that could be Brian Kelly. Like, I mean, like, it could be there are coaches where it's like, usually a coach like that wouldn't take Arkansas's call, but he's available for one reason or another. Doesn't feel like it's going to be Petrino, right? After this weekend, Bill. Like
I don't think so.
You know, that felt like
thing. So that didn't help him. I don't think that ended it. He still got a chance, but that would have been a big win for him.
The folks I talked to who were open to it,
who do they think they're going to get?
I know.
Who does Arkansas think? But I mean, to what you're talking about. All right, let's take a look at the top 10. Where do these coaches come from? How many of those were these big name home run hires that people wanted?
You'd be surprised. A lot of them were coordinators.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. All right. Ohio State, Ryan Day.
Yep. Promoted from within as a coordinator.
Indiana, the Kurt Cignetti, who had just
came from JMU.
That was his first head coaching job. Texas A&M. Mike Elko had been at Duke. That was his first head coaching job.
Elko was a sensible.
Oh, he was a very highly thought of defensive coordinator.
Elko was a sensible hire that maybe people didn't think was going to happen because A&M was because the belief was A&M was going to go big game.
Now look, Alabama, DeBoer was impressive a track record as anybody else in the top 10.
John Sumrall would be the Mike Elko of the LSU search.
You're right.
Where it's like people think, oh no, they're going to get a bigger name. They're going to get a guy with a more proven track record. It's like, no, they go get a guy who's just an excellent football coach who knows the area.
That's right, and is working his way up. Georgia, Kirby, Oregon, Dan Lanning. All right, now Lane was winning as a head coach at FAU,
and he'd been a big time head coach.
Georgia Tech with Brent Key, Vandy with Clark Lee. I mean, look at all those guys. I mean, there's not a whole lot of we're going to get a guy who's won championships at the top level.
Key was an interim who kept the job, right?
Yep.
Because they made the switch with was it Jeff Collins or whoever it was. And a lot of these are guys who either worked their way up from the mid-major ranks. I mean, where was Eli before Missouri hired
App State.
Him? Yeah, I mean, there's several examples of that.
334-321-1390. Let's go ahead and get to the phones before we get to good. We've talked about him a couple of times, and it is our buddy Tex from Baton Rouge. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Texy.
Hey guys, don't put a Y on the end.
He's trying to do the old baseball thing, you know, Tex. You always try to come one syllable with a Y on the end for the baseball nickname.
Yeah, I don't get into that part. I would tell you what my nickname used to be, but it's not. It doesn't sound very nice.
Sexy Tex.
Anyway, Bill, you had asked a question about LSU, but first, can we talk a little bit about Auburn?
Sure.
Mondays are tough for me, so I haven't really heard a lot of the show. I think we showed a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. Does that mean we're back? The answer is not really, because you got to do it. But it was on the road in the Southeastern Conference. I think that says a lot. And we battled back, and man, the defense played so good, and we created just enough offense to be able to get through. So pretty proud. Really proud that somebody that had struggled the week before really had a great game kicking the football.
Yeah, that was great.
And some of the things I saw on the internet, people talking about him, why would you ever have a kicker with a bag? And, because now he has it. He has the ability.
Yes, he does.
Anybody that says something like that should be punched in the face, in my opinion. But
Ryan, that's what we're coming to in college football. I had this discussion with a guy named Gordy Rush, who's played at LSU and is part of the he actually runs the network station. Mm-hmm. So Gordy and I were talking, and just the game, the game has changed because of the portal, but more so the fans have changed so much that it almost makes it sometimes not any fun to go to a game. It's different, and it's changing. It's, to me, it's more like the NFL.
I think a lot of fans are saying, well, they're getting paid now, so I can say whatever I want, when that's really just an excuse for them to be ugly to other people.
Tex, to your point about how, and amid the professionalization of this thing and the fact that with the portal it can feel more mercenary, than ever before. Hey, you brought in this guy for 1 year to fix this position. You know, that wasn't really how college athletics worked for a long time. The fact that you have a story like Alex amid something like that, a guy who, I mean, you think about the adversity he had to go through and the curveball he's been thrown from the kicker, you know, the college career he was supposed to have and the college career he got to watch his brother have, to dealing with a very serious gastrointestinal problem that changes his quality of life on a day-to-day basis, and to work your way back to where you can play football and worry about that again, and then to have the grief of last week in the Missouri game, and to fight through all of that to be a big reason why Auburn snaps a nearly year-long losing streak in the conference. I don't know. It's a cool. I know the season has not gone the way people wanted it to. There are still some really cool stories on this team, and Alex is one of them right now. After getting to work his way back to this kind of triumph.
Well, you can. He's a lesson in courage and work ethic. So, and courage. If you see the courage in that young man, because he's. You know, I'm assuming it's very dangerous if somebody runs into him.
I would think.
In the wrong spot, I would think. I don't know for sure, but, I mean, not just from the standpoint of his issues that he has to deal with, but he's not as big as he was once. So, anyway, I love that. Bill, now to get on to you about LSU, the answer is yes. I mean, you've driven through Baton Rouge. Anybody that's driven through Baton Rouge sees that we're littered with attorneys that deal with car wrecks and trucks, and there's one of them named Gordon, and he's leading. Plus Raising Cane's is here, plus Dow Chemical's here, plus Exxon has a giant plan here. The answer to your question a while ago is yes, they do.
Oh, okay. I just why were we hearing complaints about the perils
was it when Michigan outbid them for the quarterback that people thought suddenly LSU would run out of money, and it's like, eh, we'll see about that.
Well, so it's always interesting, the people who don't know people who have money don't understand the money, and it's missing out on somebody is just because it could have been other things. The contract offer could have been the same, but they chose a different school. So but there's other schools that have money, too. You mentioned Texas a while ago. They have plenty of money. Depends on how they choose to spend it. So the people with the money here, are a lot of them are LSU grads, big into the program, and, yes, they have the money.
Who are you hearing from? I mean, I know you know some guys that that have, you know, pretty good sources.
As much as they've cussed Lane, they're definitely making a run to Oxford. Definitely. The fan base did not like him when he was there, but he would fit in Baton Rouge extremely well, I think.
Lane's going to be making a lot more money next year, regardless of where he is.
I made the comparison text that it's like Kentucky and Bruce Pearl, where it's like Kentucky has won a lot and they're looking at a coach winning at Auburn and thinking, well, of course, if you gave him Kentucky's resources, he'd win even more. And I wonder how much of that's going on where LSU's looking at how much Lane Kiffin has won at Ole Miss and thinking, what does Oxford have that LSU doesn't have more of if the right coach is in place?
Yeah, they have Lane. That's what they have.
Right.
He's a great play caller. And designs plays that he has people running all over the field. If we made a change, I would say that would be he'd be at the top. Summerall from is on their list, and there's been some discussion in the South Florida area discussion. Mm-hmm. So all the way down toward Miami, there's been some discussion there. But I think the top two, they love Summerall here. They like the guy. I think Lane's number one and Summerall's number two.
Hmm.
Now, could that change tonight? No, the phone may buzz and may get a different name.
Well, the other thing is you wonder, I mean, I guess you could have a deal in place, but I don't see Lane leaving midseason, and I'd be surprised if John did either. But you can go ahead and have everything set.
I don't think either is, but also there's a reason they put Frank Wilson in charge. They love Frank around here.
Mm-hmm.
He's been very, very good when he's been at LSU. Matter of fact, he got rid of the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I saw.
So, but it's Frank is very, very well respected here. I think he can get them through the end of the season. They're looking past this. It's a situation where I'm sure they're willing to wait for the right person.
Yep.
For whom they deem to be the right person.
Great stuff, Dex.
All right, guys. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you later.
All right. We need to get to break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 528 here on this Monday.
I think we just figured out during the break where this is going.
Yeah, the staff changes and stuff. You know, Brian, what do you think about that? I mean, do you think, there's been some, some talk that, well, if things go better for Auburn, some people say it's as simple as Hugh Freeze stepping back and hiring a play caller. Do you think that would work?
It might because there's so much money involved and people want to win and people want to keep making that money that maybe it could work. But I always think it's a bad idea to start forcing things on coaches. You get things great. If you get a good coach or a coach you think is good, but he can't produce, so you force him to do something he doesn't want to do. I just think that leads to more problems.
Yeah, I think it's really tough when you have someone who has always done one thing, and that's one of the reasons that you hired him in the first place.
Right.
Then you say, "No, we don't want you doing that anymore."
But I do think that is an option if Freeze returns. I would just be surprised if Auburn brought him back. There would not be some conditions about the offense.
I think so too. The only way it wouldn't be, Auburn runs the table
right
from here on, and the offense really starts to click.
I think that, I agree. That's the only way.
And to me, I've wondered, and I guess we'll get a better example of this when we see if we see more Ashton Daniels, how much of this has been an issue of play calling and how much of this has been an issue of having the wrong guy at quarterback.
Of the player.
Yeah. I mean, because it can be.
I think it's worse than that. I think it's the entire offensive system is not good enough. From the bottom to the top, inside and out. Completely not good.
Daniels is the fifth quarterback. If Daniels starts Saturday, he'll be the fifth quarterback to start a game in 2.5 years, nearly 3 years for Hugh Freeze. Yeah. And if the results are similar with a bunch of different quarterbacks, it becomes tougher and tougher to say, especially quarterbacks like Peyton Thorne, who had a track record in the Big Ten before coming to Auburn, and Ashton Daniels, who has thrown the ball. It's inconsistent, I'd say, his career at Stanford. And that program's been in dire straits ever since Coach Shaw left. By the way, maybe he could get mentioned for some of these jobs, right?
Where is he right now?
He's Detroit's offensive coordinator, former Stanford head coach David Shaw.
Right.
And given a team, Bill, I think he'd do pretty well. Like at a Penn State or a Florida or an LSU, I feel like if you assume he's got the players. He would do fine for himself, but no. I think Brian, you might be onto something that there could be sort of deep seated problems with the offensive approach that don't change even as you change the personnel or haven't changed to this point, even with pretty significant overhauls at certain positions.
I think there's a problem with the approach. I think there's a problem with adjusting your offense to the players you have. And I think there's a problem in being able to scout and break down quarterbacks and being able to choose the right
evaluation.
Ones. Evaluation. Yeah. So I think it's at every single level in offense, there's an issue, in my opinion. I think it's that bad. I mean, this is the worst passing offense in the SEC. And you have spent most of your budget on offense on the wide receiver
quarterback, and
two tackles. Offensive tackles out of the portal. That is the majority of the budget and the money you invested in. You've invested in this passing offense, and it's the worst in the SEC. Okay, that there's no way to spin that, in my opinion.
No, I don't disagree. That's why I was asking. Do you think? That's why I wonder how difficult it would be for Hugh Freeze to just be able to step back and say, okay, somebody else come in and it's your offense now, it's not mine.
I think it would be difficult, and I don't like the idea of it, but I do think under these circumstances, Hugh Freeze.
I think under perfect circumstances, yes, Hugh Freeze is a great recruiter. Right. That there's no arguing that.
He has done that fabulously well. The opposite of what's happening.
And I think, look, something that Tex sort of alluded to, but we really haven't spoken that enough about it, how this team has continued to compete.
Right.
They have fought.
Deserve
they have,
credit
there
for
has
that.
Been
Absolutely.
No sign.
Yep.
A four-game losing streak. I can't recall seeing a team have a four-game losing streak. I don't care who they're against, and not looking like they're just like ready to go, oh, crap, let's just get on to next year. They don't look like that at all.
They had a captain dismissed because he wore a red shirt. They had another captain, Connor Lou, suffer a season and injury. They're still getting great leadership within the team. They are
and
not pointed fingers,
their
offensive defense.
They're competing backsides off.
Yep, and they're competing. So all those things are working really good.
They really are.
So I think in theory – him having an offensive coordinator that is able to bring in an assistant or two, because you can't do a Tony Franklin.
Oh, no, you're right. It's got to be whoever that play caller's offense. It's got to be his guys.
There was the
that could work.
There was the James Franklin had a team back in 20 that lost the weird COVID year where they lost like the first four or five games. They were all heartbreakers, and then he navigated out of the tailspin and they ran the table from there on out. Doesn't look all that impressive at 5-5, but the fact that you were able to convince a team at 0-4, at 0-5 to keep fighting is a real accomplishment.
It is.
And I think for Hugh Freeze, and look, I understand the win-loss record is what it is, and I understand that this season has not gone the way people thought it was going to go, and I don't want to give him too much credit in light of that. But the fact that that team did not look for an exit ramp down 21-10 in the rain, facing down a fifth straight loss, having never come back from down 10-plus with Hugh Freeze as the coach. Auburn had not rallied from a double-digit deficit at any point to win a game, and they had to do it Saturday or this thing was going to feel over, unplug, and it's going to be... I think you're right to find a way to keep competing and to find a way out of what looked like a pretty familiar and pretty dire situation on Saturday is it's commendable for sure.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with more of your phone calls in the final half hour of the show, so stick with us.
Sleater, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final 20 minutes. Let's get right back to the Drive hotline. And Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. I don't know about y'all, but I woke up at 3:30 this morning, all five dogs by my side, thunderstorms booming, and after it was all over, got 3 inches of rain.
We got some serious rain. I didn't check the rain gauge. We got a lot, though. Fortunately, I didn't have a bunch of dogs beside the bed, though.
Well, wow, they were freaked out.
They do not like that thunder. No, they don't.
No, they don't. That's not what I called about. But you guys were talking earlier, I've missed a couple segments, but talking about the Vandy game, the way we played like Oklahoma and A&M
and Georgia and Missouri
against Vandy, even in Nashville, just the way our defense is playing, so I'm optimistic about that. And I guess
got to win this one first, though. I tell you what, you lose this one, then that's a completely different story.
Yeah, I mean, we called it Survive in Advance on the Observer podcast, because I think with Hugh Freeze right now, you're just trying to get past another game. You're winning. You're not really worried about style points or anything like that. And if you beat Kentucky, you've got a two-game. I think you'd have the first two-game winning streak in conference play that Hugh Freeze has ever had.
Wow.
At Auburn. I don't believe he's won back-to-back SEC games.
Well, he's only won six.
And yeah, I don't believe he's ever followed up a win That's with another win in conference play.
I gotta check that.
I could have that wrong, but I don't believe he's had a winning streak in
conference
play.
Well, we know he hasn't
yet.
This year. So that's for sure.
Yeah, and the two last year, I don't think A&M came before or after a win in conference play last season, right? You had the Kentucky and anyways
it was a Kentucky lost to Vanderbilt, and then later on it was a win over A&M. So no, not last year.
Well, that's two, we know this is three, so there's only three others.
Go ahead,
Mitch.
Well, I guess I'm optimistic about Bandy just because of how we played Texas A&M out there and how they totally destroyed LSU. I don't know what the talent, you know, thing is between us and LSU. It's probably maybe the same. Maybe they're a little bit better. I
would say LSU's talent probably 1-85 is still going to be higher than Auburn's. There are a couple of things, though. One, what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, Auburn has continued to compete, and they compete for 60 minutes. LSU did not compete for 60 minutes against A&M, and I think A&M realized Auburn wasn't going to score against them, and I think they went very conservative against Auburn offensively once they got a lead.
All right, let me take you guys back to 2023.
That's right, yeah.
Phillip Montgomery is your head coach running the offense. In back-to-back games, Auburn beats Mississippi State at home and then goes on the road and blows out Vanderbilt and Arkansas. What a stretch.
They had a three-game
winning streak in conference.
Those are the good times, buddy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Those were high times in Auburn.
Golly, man, just a couple of years ago and I've forgotten.
Okay, well, to comment on, I guess, on Ashton Daniels, and Dan may have a better grasp on this, but I don't know if the standards are different at Stanford for athletes and regular students, but that's probably one of the top schools in the country. And he graduated.
Yep,
that's one of the years.
That's one of the better schools that turned me down for sure. That's one of the better.
I got
schools
accepted there.
It's one of the better schools that rejected me in the country.
Was that Stanford or Stanford?
Stanford. Stanford.
Wow, why didn't you go to Stanford?
Yeah, I didn't want to go that far away, to be honest. Not when I was 17.
Back then, I mean, because you talked about the drive from down there in South Alabama to Auburn on the back road.
Yeah, no kidding.
You, you know, forever. So I can imagine going to Stanford back then. But, okay. I want to touch on music. I don't know what the Monday musings are. I'm not gonna spoil it for you, Brian, but
yeah, we'll see. Right. You did it last week.
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't here. What happened?
You weren't here, and it's like he just jumped right in there with
that. Oh, Mitch.
It was good. That was good.
Yeah, he pointed out what happened on that date in history, and it was exactly it was Brian's music.
You're lucky I wasn't here, Mitch. You'd be serving a suspension right now.
Well, I kind of wish you guys would do the Monday musing, at the end of the first hour, in case somebody has some stories about,
a good idea.
Well, the next time that there's nothing else to talk about, we might do that.
True. Okay. But I got something for you guys. And, I mean, it took me forever to do this.
All right.
This is the last thing I got. But I came up with my top five songs of the 80s because that's when, I grew up and was most,
This week's is not the 80s, so we're good.
Music.
We're good.
Okay.
So my request for you guys is if you guys, you don't have to do it today, but Brian's probably the 80s like me.
Yep.
Dan's probably the 90s. And Bill, I'm sure you're the 70s. Great music in the 70s. If you guys could maybe come up with a top five greatest songs, to you guys. I've got my five.
I know Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House will be.
One. Is there 80 songs?
You're doing
your 80 songs? Yeah.
I'm just going through my top 40 playlists.
I kind of want to all do our favorite songs of the 80s. We can do but four
I
or three.
I'd have to think about them for a while.
Do you guys want me to give you my
Yeah, top sure.
Five? Okay. Number five is Smooth Criminal by Michael Jackson.
All right.
Number four is How Soon Is Now by the Smiths.
Mm.
Number three is
You're a Moz guy?
Again?
You're a Morrissey guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Love Morrissey.
Yeah. That.
Yes, that's because of a buddy of mine that lives up in New York now got me into the whole alternative and Weagle
yeah,
thing.
No, very, yeah, okay. Very cool. Yeah, what was
number three?
Number three is Everyone Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah. Okay, I just heard world.
That'd be, Ferguson. Yeah. Ferguson would have Everybody Wants to Rule the World in his Tears for Fears.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Number two is Eyes Without a Face by Billy Idol.
Okay.
And number one is, God, why am I drawing a blank?
All this and you make us, you're blanking on one?
No, it's number one is by The Cure.
Is it a love song?
No, it came out in 89. How can I not remember the Cure song?
That's pretty bad when your number one is the one you can't remember.
And I'm going over this in my head. Just Like Heaven.
Friday. Just Like Heaven.
Just Like Heaven's a good one. Yep.
Yeah, that's mine.
1987.
So, hey,
yep.
You know, think about it. You know,
that's good.
Something to do for your Monday musings, maybe. That's all I got, guys. War Eagle. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Mitch. Appreciate the call. And, why don't we let's go into the Monday musings before we get to our final break?
Now this is kind of a repeat. I think both of you get this. Let me get it because I like
kind
my
of a
opening
repeat.
Line. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's not enough songs or artists for you.
I've been doing this for a while now, believe it or not.
Like, you know what, Brian? I think there's still more songs.
I know. In today's musical journey, we go back 65 years.
Hold on.
1960.
1960.
Okay.
1960.
To the recording of a classic R&B song. That was used in a 1986 film by the same name.
Oh,
it's been covered by more than 400 artists, including John Lennon, Otis Redding, and even Muhammad Ali.
Definitely got it.
Yep. Is it the even Muhammad Ali recorded this? I'm trying to think what the song.
Yeah. Well, I know when
the
he
song
said
Soul. Is it Soul Man?
Nope.
No, it's Stand By Me.
Stand by me. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, when he said
Yep. I was doing like songs from the 80s that had
movie titles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stand By Me is a good one.
Yeah, Benny King.
Benny King, yes.
And he was...
Lean On Me is a song from the 80s with a movie title.
Well, it is. Lean On Me, was it maybe in the 70s? Was that late 70s?
The song or the...
Lean On Me, the song.
Oh, yeah. I
think the song may have... Yeah. The song was actually 70s.
The Morgan Freeman movies from the 80s.
Yeah, you're right. Benny King was with... I forgot the name of the band, but the Drifters had just been fired, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I didn't know if you went into that, but I remember the story. I was... You know why? I was listening a couple of weeks ago to Casey's 70s countdown.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he did a flashback and told the whole Benny King... Yep. Because he had another song like in the 70s. Out of nowhere, he came back and had a song that charted in the 70s, and he was talking about Benny King and the Drifters, how the Drifters were fired.
Supernatural Thing was his comeback song.
That's it. So they went.
The Five Crowns was the name of his band.
Went and got the band and said, do you want to be called the Drifters? And they went, yeah, sure.
So,
but he said when they first started, they went out and the original Drifters fans were so incensed
they
threw crap at them while they were on the stage.
The Five Crowns was his band. They were playing at the Apollo along with the Drifters. The Drifters got fired, the entire band, by the manager who owned the name, so he hired the Five Crowns to be the new Drifters.
Hmm.
And then he was with them for 2 years, had a couple of hit songs. There Goes My Baby, Save the Last Dance for Me, This Magic Moment, all songs you probably have heard or know. And then went on his solo career.
Lean On Me from 1972, Bill Withers.
Yes.
Another 80s movie with a song title from a 60s song, or an 80s movie took its title from a song from the 60s, Can't Buy Me Love. Of course, another one that would have that.
I've got great trivia.
There are a lot of those.
I got some great trivia from this. This song was the fourth most played track in the 20th century. Yes, Stand By Me. Can you name the other four in the top five in the 20th century? Radio TV. Yep. I would say this: they're all past 1950 because, of course, you have more radio, more TV, right? So you know, they're not going to be old songs. They're all songs you will definitely recognize.
Well, I'm sure we'll recognize them, but there's just no telling.
Satisfaction.
Nope.
Okay.
Not one. See if you can name one.
Is there a Beatles respect. Song in there?
There is Aretha. A Beatles song.
Aretha, yes, respect. Nope. Okay.
There is a Beatles song.
There's one
song.
Beatles song.
Hey Jude.
Nope. Close. That's close. It's one of those kind of ballads.
Yesterday.
Yep, there you go.
It's yesterday? Okay.
Yep. All right, how about this song appeared in a Tom Cruise movie in 1980s.
You've Lost That Love and Feeling.
Number one.
Righteous Brothers.
Number one.
Wow, number one.
Is there an Elvis song on here?
Number one.
Did Elvis make this?
There is not. Okay. Wow. Which is crazy. The next one was by, I can't remember the name of the band. It was one of those 70s, I would call them kind of a cheese band. Oh,
like REO Speedwagon or something? No, I don't want to name names here, but
70s cheese bands.
Or maybe
like,
it was 60s.
Archie's.
Maybe
it was 60s. Oh, what, is it Sugar Sugar?
No, it's Never My Love by
the Association.
The Association.
Oh, wow. I don't think REO Speedwagon is a 70s cheese band, by the way. I was just trying to assume it. I was trying to guess Brian's.
Never My Love was 2, Yesterday 3, Stand By Me 4, and this song, number 5, I think it's by... Tony Bennett? No, maybe not Tony
I left
Bennett.
My heart in San Francisco.
No, it may not be Tony. I may have the wrong. It could be. Who sang the Grease song?
Frankie Valli.
Frankie Valli.
It could be Frankie Valli.
Okay.
He's the lead singer of the Four Seasons.
Like, yeah, Walk Like a Man or something? Okay.
I may have the wrong artist. You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
It's Can't Take My Eyes Off You. Is that Frankie
that
Valli?
That is Frankie Valli.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one. Yeah.
All right. Great stuff from Brian. The Monday Musics. And of course, what was your sports?
Oh, I wrote about the same things we've been talking about, basically. I wrote about how the defense stepped up, that Freeze and the defense and Durkin, everybody deserves credit for sticking together on that
but
team.
But the offense
staying
still,
engaged.
Yeah.
And then I wrote about still got issues with the offense, and I wrote it like this. I don't need to watch the film to know Daniels needs to start against Kentucky. It would be the catastrophic error of judgment to do otherwise. And that's the way I feel.
And now we will see on Saturday. All right, we need to get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Monday Drive.
This is Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones.
And that is what we are doing. We're out of time. Fun show here today. Our thanks to Brian Matthews. B-Matt, before you go, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys have going.
Cranked out over a dozen stories today. We'll have probably as many tomorrow. We got football and basketball. Media opportunities, all that more, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter /X at BMATAU.
All right. I am out at least early on tomorrow. I have no idea what got a little
we're going to do a show tomorrow.
Coach Don will be in.
We're going to do a show tomorrow. Coach Don will be here. I'll be here for some, maybe all of it. Bill will be here
for maybe some
maybe
but not all of it.
Maybe none of it.
Tune in and find out who's here. That's going to do it for the Monday show. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.